Okay, so we'll change the names, David and Sally. Those are the names we'll use. The story comes from the north of England. I've got the address, the telephone number and everything, but there's no point in, I don't know, ruining people's lives by exposing them to gossip. This lady had had a fairly tough upbringing. She was always the black sheep of the family. Life wasn't too easy for her. As a result of being maybe a bit of a wastrel, it was always her who got a good hiding when anything went wrong. She can always remember one particular occasion when she was 11, when her father said to her that he hated her and wished she'd never been born. Now, you can imagine, when she met David, who was 6 years older than she was, fell in love, she was just thrilled. They got married, and after they were married, she thought to herself, well, she must be the luckiest lady in the world, her own home, and with the man she loved. In March 1982, along came the first daughter, followed by a second daughter in October of 1983. Everything in life seemed rosy. And then in January 1985, 6 years ago, came the bombshell. After a night out in the local pub, while everything seemed as it usually was, when they got home, David said, can we talk? And she said, yeah. And you know when you don't really notice that someone, usually your other half, is actually trying to attract your attention? She sort of potted around doing things. And he said, no, I really need to talk with you. So the two of them sat down, cup of tea, and the story came out. He said he couldn't hurt her anymore, and she ought to know something that he'd never told her, which was that he was bisexual. In fact, he'd been sleeping with a man the night she'd given birth to her second daughter. Now, this came as a bolt from the blue. She'd never thought of this. It had never occurred to her. She couldn't believe it. Everything seemed so normal, so average in the 4 years they'd been married. David then begged her not to leave him because he said he still loved the girls, the two daughters, and he still loved her. She had to come across with something that was intelligent under circumstances when she was so bowled over she couldn't even think straight. But she told him, provided that he had an AIDS test, he could stay, but he'd have to sleep in the spare room just for the girl's sake. Well, David agreed to that. He went and was given the all clear in April of 1985. He then promised not to sleep with the fella again, as long as Sally let him go for a drink with other people, gay people like him, that he wouldn't be promiscuous. She agreed for two reasons. First of all, I think for the daughters, but also because she still loved him. It doesn't stop you loving somebody just to discover that. And though it is something that she'd never considered before, when it actually happened, she examined her own feelings, and she knew that though she was revolted by certain aspects of his behaviour, the fact was that he was still the same bloke. Well, inside, of course, it was tearing her apart. She didn't know what was happening. She didn't let it show, ever. Just carried on as if nothing had happened. Eventually, David moved back into Sally's bedroom, and as a result, her third daughter was born in October of 1988. When she discovered she was pregnant, she couldn't cope with it. She was just learning to deal with David's bisexuality and the idea of the two girls being around him. She realizes now that some people will condemn her for not taking birth control precautions, but she didn't think about it. David wanted her to have an abortion, but she decided to have the baby with or without him, and she decided that she would just cope, that this was a piece of reality. When she was 3.5 months pregnant, David packed his cases and left her and the girls to live with another man. He decided that he was totally committed to the idea of being gay and couldn't live in a bisexual relationship. She was just destroyed. I mean, devastated is an understatement. Sally couldn't tell anyone why David had left her. It was so humiliating. And before you say, oh no, she shouldn't have worried about that, well, how would you turn around to someone and say that your other half had left you for someone of the same sex? She didn't have any close friends she could confide in. Her family were not that close, and so there was no one to speak to. She had to cope on her own for the girl's sake, knowing that she'd been rejected by her husband for another man. A few weeks later, she attended the antenatal clinic, and the midwife noticed that she'd lost a stone in weight in, well, 3 or 4 weeks, asked her what was worrying, and Sally just broke down, explained everything. The doctor was called. She was sent in for an AIDS test. That proved negative, which was a tremendous weight off her mind. But by this time, she was 7 months pregnant. She'd lost 3.5 stone in weight. She was a complete physical and mental wreck. Couldn't see that she was going downhill fast at the time. But looking back now, she realizes just how bad she must have been. She found out where David was living and went to see him. And she begged him to come home because the doctor was admitting her to hospital and she had no one, but literally no one, to look after the girls. He thought about it. It's pretty remarkable that he thought about it, I suppose. You'd have imagined that he'd come straight home and get on with the business of looking after the girls. But he agreed to arrive at their place and look after the girls until Sally had had the baby and everything was hunky-dory. By this time, of course, all the staff in the hospital knew exactly what the story was, that Sally had married a bisexual who'd committed himself to a gay relationship and left her in the lurch with a baby on the way. The doctors and nurses were immensely kind. They knew the circumstances were really difficult. They were understanding. They tried to get her to eat and drink. She wasn't really interested, and they were enormously sympathetic. To be honest, I don't think Sally cared if she lived or died at this point. And then one day she collapsed in the ward. She was rushed back into bed and fitted with drips to feed her. By this time it was make or break. The consultant came to see her and said, "Look, I'm interested in you. Of course I am, but I'm more interested in the baby. And the baby matters. The baby has got to live." And that was the only way he could help her, to think of the baby, and she did. The baby was born, happy and alive and perfect. And when David saw the child, he was really pleased and said he was glad. She arrived home, and you can imagine how tense things were, because she knew perfectly well that he was going to go back to his man. She found it very difficult to cope with, but she just concentrated on looking after the two girls and the baby. David decided to stay for a while, moved into the spare bedroom, but then started going out every night, and sometimes his moods became unpleasant. And gradually, the unpleasantness, the resentment, and the hatred resulted in beating. He started to pick arguments and just give her the odd blow. But the last straw came when he beat her up in front of the girls. She took the beating. It was no use trying to reason with an outraged drunk. And then the very next day, she told David that he had to move out because she didn't love him anymore, that he'd beaten all the affection out of her, and that he was damaging the girls' minds. David moved out, moved back with the married man, because that's what the other guy was, and he now comes to see the girls regularly, and they just try and be polite. She has a friendship with a bloke, just a friendship. It's someone who listens and someone who provides the odd shoulder when she needs it, and now she's just waiting. She has a way of looking at the future. She lives life for today because she believes that nothing else can go wrong and that happiness, if she's lucky, might just be around the corner.